Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Great to have you with us. Well, Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir appoints a first vice president and a new prime minister a day after he declared a state of emergency to counter anti-government protests. Now, demonstrations have been going on for a few months, with protesters saying three decades of Bashir's president is more than enough and are demanding that he steps down. Is a change on the horizon for Sudan? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on this debate.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir declared a national state of emergency for a year, dissolved the federal government, and dismissed all state governors.
I declare the following: A. Imposing a state of emergency across the country for 1 year. B. Dissolving the government at the federal level. And C. Dissolving the governments at the provincial level.
In a televised speech, Bashir also asked parliament to postpone constitutional amendments that would allow him to run for the 2020 presidential election to seek a third term in office. Hours later, Bashir issued two decrees appointing military and security officials as governors of Sudan's 18 provinces. He also appointed a new caretaker administration and announced that five members of the outgoing cabinet will return their posts. The declaration followed weeks of deadly demonstrations that have rocked his 30 years' rule. A sweeping crackdown has killed dozens of people since the protests flared up on December 19th over rising prices and shortages. Bashir is facing the biggest popular protest in Sudan since he seized power in a military coup in 1989 that toppled an elected government. The demonstrations have spread to villages, towns and cities across the country with no sign of abating. Now, with a state of emergency in place, security forces can freely quell protests and silence voices of dissent. In a rare acknowledgement, Bashir, however, described the protesters' demand as legitimate, but said some are trying to hijack their protests, taking the country to the unknown. Soon after the announcement, protesters split into the streets in defiance, vowing to press on with their demonstrations until Bashir goes. The Sudanese Professional Association, which is leading the protest campaign, warned of more street protests if their demands are not met. The association calls the campaign a revolution that aims to end Bashir's three decades of rule. Bashir is wanted by the International Criminal Court over genocide charges in Sudan's Darfur region. He denies the charges.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, African policy analyst Lawrence Freeman out of Baltimore and political analyst Julius Mamaluto out of London. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's start this off in London. In your perspective, Julius, what's the main reason behind these protests?
Well, actually, although in December there's the issue of food, hiking of prices of food commodities was seen as an issue, I don't think that's the very issue, because we're talking of people rebelling because of long-time leadership of Omar Bashir. And we are talking about Omar Bashir, who came into power through the barrel of the gun, you know, and that was all the way in 1989. So all these people, youthful people, being led by someone for three decades is pretty long time for them. And when you see them protesting relentlessly, the issue is not about the food shortages, it's about leadership, poor leadership. Remember that Omar Bashir has been leading with a warrant of arrest by the ICC, International Criminal Court. So therefore, these people protesting, they want certainty of their lives and the future of their country. I think that's a really bone of contention.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, your take on that, is it just that basically fatigue with three decades of somebody being in a rule, or just tell me your perspective on the main reasons behind what we're seeing take place right now?
I've been involved in studying Sudan and traveled there many times over the last 25 years. The difficulty right now is that Sudan has not pursued an aggressive economic development policy for their country. So people are living poorly, there are serious economic hardships in the country, and unfortunately, the government, contrary to my advice, has been following the diktats of the International Monetary Fund, who ordered them to cut subsidies on food and fuel and have not been involved in building the necessary infrastructure and energy and rail that would lift the country out of poverty. So getting rid of Omar Bashir, the president, will not solve the problem. There is a faction operating in Sudan and outside of Sudan in Washington with people like George Soros of the Open Society, the National Endowment of Democracy, and others who want to overthrow the government. The criminal charges by the International Criminal Court were a fraud, and I spoke against them back in 2009. What's needed now is to kick the IMF out of the country and get leadership to follow an economic development policy that will be in the interest of improving the living conditions of the Sudanese people.
Well, Lawrence, let me just stay with you for a second, because you talked about the IMF, and I'm wondering, of course, we know Omar Bashir and his background and clashes basically with the so-called international community. So why would he or his government then agree to go along with what the IMF would dictate to them?
The government of Sudan now has over $50 billion in debt. And what they are doing is they are threatening Sudan, saying if you don't reduce your government expenditures, i.e. cut subsidies, cut investment in infrastructure, we will not alleviate your loans. I was at an IMF meeting with the IMF and Sudan and the World Bank last year, and they said, the Sudanese people will have to undergo more pain and suffering so that you reduce your budget, and then we will consider whether we will give you some reprieve on your debt.
Okay, stay with me, Lawrence. Let me get Julius back in on this discussion. Julius, your take, I mean, in general, what do you see happening right now? Why did the president dissolve the government?
Let's just go to the key issues here. We are beating a lot about the bush, and Africans have been very quick, African leaders have been quick to blame the West for the woes of their people. But actually, the bottom line is poor leadership. Omar Bashir comes into power in 1989. He spent his life in war. When he joined Sudan was one country. He was a commander who was fighting with General Garang, and they broke parts. Another country was born known as South Sudan. Do you want to tell me that was a fault of the West or economic advice from IMF? No, it wasn't. Now, we are talking about right now the issues that are really happening beyond our eyes. You see, he was changing the constitution to prolong his leadership, to vie next time. This has come 2020. He was to vie again, according to the constitution. And we have seen yesterday him coming, sending governors home. And we have seen him also appointing security officers and army generals, his friends, into positions. We have seen him today appoint the vice president and the prime minister, who were his mates when they were fighting to come into power illegally through the barrel of the gun. So when we are talking about ICC charges as fraud, no, it's not, because crimes against humanity were committed. And therefore, he's supposed to face justice just like any other person who commits such kind of crimes.
What about that, Lawrence? Your take on what our guests out of London just said?
Well, look, the ICC has no credibility. It should have been put to rest many years ago. Hopefully, the African Union has denounced the ICC and has not even recognized their charges, because all their charges are against Africans, no one else in the world.
As far as South Sudan was created by a cabal in Washington, D.C., by people like Susan Rice and John Pendergrass and Congressman Payne and the British to create a separate country as a means to bring down Khartoum and Bashir and the National Congress Party. They cared nothing about the welfare of South Sudan. I told Washington myself that South Sudan was not at the verge, not at the point that it could become a separate country. They didn't care. They don't care about the suffering going on in South Sudan. They wanted to use it to bring down North Sudan. And as a result, we have a failed state that was created primarily by Washington, D.C. and London. So let's tell the truth about what's going on in Africa, and let's embark on a program of economic development such as the Chinese are doing with the Silk Road, which is building infrastructure throughout the continent of Africa. That's the positive direction we should go.
Okay. Well, Julius, do you feel that Bashir has basically outlived his support from other officials and also the majority of the people, or not?
I do argue this in a very strong terms. Every child born in any country, in any part of the world, should have a valid dream to become the president. When one man stays in power for 30 years, those are three decades. You lose plot with one generation because we are so much at rest with the happenings around us during our generation of our time. When you stay in power for three decades, you have lost the plot with two generations. And that's what Omar Bashir has done. Can I say this? A huge chunk of Africans are youth. But the presidents who are clinging to power, like Omar Bashir, the President Museveni of Uganda, the Zimbabwe President Mugabe, they have no place in modern-day Africa. So the issue is not about the West. Yes, there's collusion between bad leaders and the West to exploit resources in Africa. That happens, but actually that's not the issue. The issue is changing leadership, number one, constitutionally, not wanting to rule in perpetuity. A president is not a royal family member. Sudan is not a monarchy, you know? So a queen can stay forever, a king can stay forever. But presidents are chosen for a particular kind of time. So it's about time. He should have left power a long time ago, changed power legally, constitutionally, handed over to younger people.
And are you optimistic that that is about to happen, Julia, staying with you?
100%. Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. You can see now, when a president in Africa declares state of emergency for 1 year, let's be focused here. Omar Bashir's rulership was remaining 1 year. 2020, he was to vie again. So that state of emergency has taken care of the remaining part of him in power. What we saw yesterday and today is him reorganizing to begin to rule through the military, simply put. And when you say after the state of emergency 1 year, what's going to happen? He's going to have already placed his own people in the right places. But now, if we look away from that, what is happening? All the people who are in power today, and he was with them, and he was governing with them, the governors, the administrative authorities, leaders, wherever they were, the ones he's throwing away right now, the ones he's reshuffling and kicking out, they are the ones who are going to join the revolution. And this will be the end of Omar Bashir.
Well, what do you think, Lawrence Freeman, what do you think about the whole suspending the government and emergency, state of emergency, being implemented for a year? What's the goal of that in your perspective?
Well, it's a desperate act because essentially these demonstrations, which began in December, have now continued for about 2 months, which is a very long time to sustain protest in Sudan. And therefore, the government is desperate to try to hold on, but it's not going to work. You're not going to be able to stop the people's demands for food, for housing, for electricity, for decent jobs, for the future of their children and their families. So this measure is very temporarily. It's not going to withstand for a long period of time. What is necessary, I agree with my friend on the other end of the phone, the youth are the future of Africa. I mean, there's going to be over 1 billion young people in about 30 years in Africa. But we have to have the right policy. Simply changing a leader will not solve the problem. If we get rid of Bashir, we could bring in someone worse, or we could bring in someone who will work even closer with the IMF and the World Bank and Wall Street and the City of London, which will cause more hardship for the people. So I am not a Sudanese. I don't tell the Sudanese people what to do. But I can say that I can put forth the right kind of policy that will actually help the country. And that is what we need at this point. We should have new leadership, but we should have new leadership that understands how to develop the country. Otherwise, the suffering will continue. I've been to Darfur twice. I've seen what conditions are like. I don't like it. I hate it. And I want to change the economy of Sudan. And we have to do that by kicking out the IMF and the World Bank and the others who are trying to overthrow the government. Overthrowing governments is not the right policy. Regime change is not the right policy.
What about that, Julia? It's that regime change is not the right policy. And what Lawrence has said is that there has to be definite changes in the systematic way of dealing with the economy, and that just changing Bashir is not going to change Sudan's problem or overall situation. Your take on that, Julius?
I 100% agree. I do not support regime change. I do not support the idea that dictating to a country, sovereign nation, who to elect is the way forward. I do personally very strongly believe genuine change, in essence, comes from the citizens of a particular country. And therefore, I see this as a matter of Sudanese people. They are the ones going to the streets, taking on the roads. I pray they are not doing it under dictates of America or London or any other Western country, or even IMF or World Bank. I fully wish and I think they are doing this based on their circumstances, economic hardships, hiking of prices, which are hitting them directly. This is a motivation that takes them to the street, you know, without counting any other thing. But if change will come, let it be the change that is born from Sudan itself, change by the Sudanese citizens of Sudan themselves. You know, regime change is not what I advocate for, but changing presidents through election, democratic election, democratic negotiations, then that's what I support for. My last point on your question, mm-hmm. When everyone is going at it hammer and tongs, and there's all this noise, and it's so easy to just change faces, not fundamental change that mean anything to people. Right. So for me, Sudanese change should be about the policies and new leadership. Not just one man to replace Bashir. We want quality. Whoever replaces must be someone who rules for the benefit of Sudan.
Well, isn't that the question in general, Lawrence? And this is what we see, we've seen in so many African countries, as our guest in London has just said, that about the changes, and echo what you had said, that actual instrumental changes need to take place, systemic changes. But I guess the question would be is it going to be allowed? And what I mean by that is that we see so much interference by several different Western countries when it comes to African affairs. Tell me, how do you think that this is going to end up? Because as you said, that the demonstrations will probably continue. They won't be able to stop them. So if there's a change on the horizon, let me hear what you think is on the way.
Well, if you look at the conditions in Sudan, I mean, don't forget, they've been on the sanctions for decades.
Right.
There's been a concerted effort for regime change. There's been no credit available to them to build their economy. So the president and the country have been under very difficult conditions. In 2011, they lost their main resource, oil. So the question is, what should be happening? Is there should be investments in development of thousands of megawatts of electricity, of new rail lines, of new manufacturing centers, building up the Gezerra scheme again to make agricultural productive? We see in countries throughout Africa, such as Nigeria, which is having an election today, the George Soros and the Open Society have called for getting rid of Buhari. We've seen statements coming out of the U.S. Congress from Congressman Smith holding Buhari responsible if there's a problem in the election. Because General Buhari, now President Buhari, is actually doing something to fight for the development of infrastructure in the country. So we see all over Africa, the ugly hand of the West is all over the place. And now you see the West is attacking China, when China is actually doing what should have been done 60 years ago, build railroads, build ports, produce energy production plants, hydroelectric power, nuclear energy. None of this was done by the West since the Africans became independent in 1960. And now they're complaining that China's doing it. So really, these countries have not been fully sovereign. They have not been allowed to make sovereign decisions about their own development. And I agree with my friend. Sudan should be making sovereign decisions, educated, thoughtful policy for the future of this country, which has great potential in agriculture and other areas way beyond the wealth of oil.
And on that
note, what I would like to see happen in the future.
On that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with us, but unfortunately, we are out of time. African policy analyst Lawrence Friedman out of Baltimore, political analyst Julius Mabaluta out of London. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate right here at Press TV. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.